Local news, culture, and NPR.
From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me this evening. Well, coming up, we're going to get an update on the Sullivan County Airport when Patricio Rubio talks to Sullivan County Manager Josh Potosik. It's coming up in the second half of the program. And lawmakers have questions for the companies who are providing $9 billion worth of home care to New Yorkers. Journalists have questions, too. Sam Mellon, senior reporter for New York Focus, joins me in just a moment to tell us what he wanted to know and what lawmakers and journalists found out at a hearing last week. But first, before President Trump sent National Guard troops into Washington, D.C., Governor Kathy Hochul sent National Guard troops into the New York City subway system. But the governor says the two situations are totally different. WNYC's John Campbell reports.
The governor and the president both deployed the troops to combat crime. But Hochul says the New York National Guard is working cooperatively with the NYPD and MTA police, unlike in Washington, where the president took control of the D.C. police.
I'll stand by what I did. Wildly different from the abusive power that Donald Trump is once again engaging in our nation's capital.
There's about 750 National Guard members in the subway system. They've been there since March 2024. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. Well, New York's Medicaid program pays for hundreds of thousands of residents to receive services at home. People who are elderly or disabled and need help maintaining their quality of life. And since April, the state has contracted with Public Partnership LLC, or PPL, to provide those services. New York Focus is reporting on troubling signs in New York's home care system and is raising questions about PPL and the company that it uses to provide insurance for its workers. Because these questions aren't just about the quality of care received by home care patients in New York, it's about the quality of the health insurance that these home care workers receive as employees. If the quality of care the healthcare workers receive is problematic, that could then impact the quality of care that they can provide, especially if workers start quitting for other jobs that have better coverage. I spoke to Sam Mellon, senior reporter with New York Focus, to find out what questions he has about Leading Edge, the company that PPL uses to provide health insurance to its workers in New York State.
So we've been reporting on Leading Edge for months now because there's a lot there. And some of the things that we've encountered is that Leading Edge, you know, because they insure many people already, even before this contract started. And there are cases where a patient will go get care and the doctor will bill Leading Edge insurance and Leading Edge will just not pay or will not pay a significant part of the bill, which obviously is a big problem, both if you're the doctor who wants to get paid and if you're the patient who doesn't want to have to pick up the tab for what may be very expensive treatments. And just one other aspect of this that we, you know, sort of raised the question is if an insurer doesn't pay a bill, either the doctor or the patient can appeal and ask them to reconsider. That's a right that is enshrined in law. And when people do this with Leading Edge, they often simply don't respond, which is not legally compliant. So that's another big issue in this new contract in New York. How are we going to be able to be sure that they're going to pay people's bills and that they're going to respond as they must when there's an appeal?
Yeah, and you note here that, you know, multiple former Leading Edge employees said that Leading Edge regularly flouted that rule and that they said that appeals would be left lingering for months or even years. So your first question is basically about Leading Edge not paying medical bills. Your second question is, okay, if Leading Edge refuses to pay something, how will PPL ensure that Leading Edge handles those appeals in a timely manner? Then you're actually just straight up asking if Leading Edge's insurance plan is a scheme.
Yeah, and specifically a scheme to keep money from healthcare workers, because these workers that we mentioned who provide care to elderly and disabled people are being required to purchase this leading edge insurance. Part of their paycheck is going to this insurance, whether they want it or not. Even if they already have other insurance, they are still paying for this insurance. Now, the problem is the main plan that's being offered, it's not really health insurance, which is to say it doesn't cover hospitalization. It doesn't cover surgery. It doesn't cover specialist visits. It covers only basic preventative care. So if you're being made to pay for health insurance, but then it turns out that this health insurance barely covers anything, what are you actually paying for? And is that is it fair to divert part of workers' paychecks to health insurance that will be useless to many of them, especially if they already have other insurance?
You say that, like, in a statement last month, a PPL spokesperson said that, you know, that analysis is not correct, and that the companies and its partners are not profiting off unspent premiums. But then you note that this spokesperson, a spokesperson for the company, wouldn't say who they were and wouldn't answer any follow-up questions and didn't provide any evidence for that assertion.
Right. So, I asked PPL and Leading Edge, by the way, a bunch of questions along the lines of what we've just been talking about. Leading Edge gave me no response at all. They've never responded to me over months of reporting. And PPL emailed back and said, this is all incorrect. You're assuming things that are wrong, blah, 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 et cetera. And I said, okay, great. Let's talk about it. Here are some follow-up questions I have. Can we do an interview about it? Can I speak to a representative of the company? And I heard radio silence back. So I put in my article that they denied my claims, but why they denied them, I don't know.
And finally, you say, are these two plans legal? So walk me through what you're asking there.
Yeah, so without getting too wonky about it, one is this health insurance plan, you know, that barely covers anything that we've been talking about. Another part of healthcare workers' paychecks are also being diverted to this sort of benefit card that they can use for healthcare spending. Maybe it's too technical for right now, but the question is whether it is legal for PPL and Leading Edge to require that workers divert part of their paychecks to health insurance and health benefits that many will likely be unable to use. And it seems that especially if PPL and Leading Edge are making money off of this, which they have denied, but have not provided evidence. If they're making money off of it, they could run into some real problems with state law that's supposed to prevent that kind of behavior.
Is this a common thing, that card situation?
It's definitely this sort of this benefit card that you can use for various, you know, health expenses and things like that. It's definitely known. I've seen other examples of it. There are companies that exist to set up this kind of thing. But, you know, other companies say, we're just going to give our employees cash instead and let them decide what they want to do with it. So it's not at all universal.
So those are the five questions that you asked, and I unfortunately got out of order with them, but that's basically what you're looking for. And this is pretty much, just to clarify again, make sure I'm on the right track, that this is all about the health care that the care workers who are providing home care for New Yorkers at relatively low wages, I think, right? This is all about what insurance they're getting from Leading Edge, right?
That's right. I mean, this might seem like a niche issue, but there are hundreds of thousands of these workers around the state. It's a major, major type of employment. They do really essential work caring for elderly and disabled people. They don't make a lot of money doing it, generally about $20 an hour. And so if, you know, they're being made to pay for health benefits that many of them don't want and can't use, they may seek other employment. And that would be a big problem in terms of finding people to provide care to people who need help.
Yeah. And before we leave this part of the story, are there any other examples of what you learned from these workers and their experience with their insurance that you want to share with folks?
I mean, I've talked to people who have this insurance in the past, and I've looked at lawsuits against Leading Edge, the insurer. And it just seems like there's a lot of serious issues, you know, people being left in medical debt, people having their insurance canceled, the insurer approving a surgery and then revoking approval after the bill was already due. So I really would not like to be in that kind of situation. I would not like for a family member to be in that kind of situation. And I hope that this low wage, essential workforce won't be placed in that situation by this insurance.
Here in New York State, who is supposed to hold these companies accountable and make sure they are doing things legally by their employees?
So this is all happening under a Department of Health program, under the state's Medicaid program. So it's really part of the job of the Department of Health to ensure that the relevant laws and rules are being followed. Also, if there are sort of wage theft issues or workers' rights issues, that is something that the Attorney General could potentially investigate as well.
We're talking to Sam Mellon, senior reporter at New York Focus. And so, Sam, that's all the reporting that you did before this hearing last week. These are the questions that you had before this hearing last week. Can you tell me about the hearing and, you know, who was there and what questions did lawmakers have and what did you find out?
This is a hearing that's been planned for a month or two now to sort of investigate the turmoil in this home care program, which, you know, we've been talking about the company PPL that now runs it. Since they took it on in April, there's just been a lot of chaos, you know, missed paychecks, malfunctioning software, data breaches. You know, people say they can't get through on the phone lines, people leaving the program. So this hearing was hosted by state senators James Skoufis and Gustavo Rivera. A bunch of other state senators were also there asking questions and hearing testimony. And there were a whole host of witnesses, including the sort of the most key ones. The first two were the commissioner of the State Department of Health, Dr. James McDonald, and a representative of PPL, who were there to sort of answer questions about the program. But I think it is safe to say that lawmakers did not get the answers or the information that they were looking for.
Yeah, your headline, you know, quotes, I think, Skoufis, complete waste of our time is your headline. Lawmakers get few answers on home care chaos. Is McDonald, who was there to answer questions, is that one of the key players who should be straightening this all out for New Yorkers?
Yeah, and lawmakers were asking him a lot of questions since he runs the Department of Health about, you know, why these things are happening, why all the chaos in this program. Is he concerned that people are leaving it? Does he think that PPL is complying with laws about, like we mentioned, about how you have to pay workers and give them benefits? And I think it's fair to say he spent a lot of time dodging questions or saying he didn't have particular facts and figures that the senators were looking for and things of that nature. So they were pretty dissatisfied with his testimony.
You pretty early on in this article, you talk about Senator Lee Webb asking McDonald how the state is ensuring that PPL performs the services that the state is paying it for. And basically McDonald said there are accountability mechanisms, but didn't list any, saying, quote, it's in the contract and I'm not sure if that part of the contract is public. So I'm not sure if I can give those examples. So, I mean, are there mechanisms to make sure this company is doing what the public needs them to do? The answer is, yeah, but we're not sure if we can tell the public.
Yeah, which I think is a little bit concerning. I mean, I hope that the Department of Health is exercising oversight and making sure that New Yorkers are getting what they're paying for with this program. But from the commissioner's words, it's pretty hard to know if that's actually happening or not.
And what about Burns representing PPL? How was her response?
Yeah, I gave one example of a question that each of them dodged. So you went over McDonald. Patty Burns, who was vice president of PPL, who was testifying, was asked whether she can guarantee that PPL will remain solvent for the duration of its 5-year contract with the state. Pretty important thing for a company that is providing essential services to hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers. And she said, I am not sure. At this time, we are solvent. So that is not exactly encouraging. I would be pretty concerned if I was getting essential services through this program that the company running it can't guarantee its own solvency. But that's what we got last Thursday.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, you wanted answers to questions. Sounds like you didn't really get your answers. Lawmakers wanted answers to questions. Sounds like they didn't get many answers. What happens next? And what do you think will happen? And what are people saying will happen?
Well, speaking to reporters, Senator Skoufis, who was one of the people leading the hearing, Catskill State Senator, said, you can be sure this is not the end of the conversation. So we don't know yet what that looks like, whether it could be issuing subpoenas, which lawmakers do have the power to do, or something else. But they are promising further investigation and further accountability efforts. One interesting thing, we were talking earlier about Leading Edge, the insurer, and the many issues they had. One interesting thing that the PPL representative did say was that they are considering trying to offer different health insurance to workers. Whether or not that is with the Leading Edge, she didn't say, but maybe they're going to seek to improve some of the issues with the current insurance and all the things it doesn't cover. But we will have to wait and see.
We've been talking to Sam Mellon, senior reporter with New York Focus. Both of his articles that we've been talking about the home care situation in New York State, they're both up now at nysfocus.com. Sam, thank you for doing this work, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jason.
We've got more news to come in our weekly check-in with Sullivan County. We'll get an update on the county airport, so stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
There's so much money tied up in this. Every VC firm is spending insane amounts to get into AI companies. And I think it's a really fair and important to question whether this stuff is going to even work out. Not treat it as an inevitability.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. You know, we've got a holiday weekend coming up, and you should start it right. So come out to Putt-Putt for Public Radio. This is an evening of mini golf happening this Friday at Putt-Putt Van Winkle, County Route 6, Bovina Center, New York, in the heart of the Catskills. We'll have drinks, snacks, everything you need to play mini golf, all for $15, all to support Radio Catskill. Putt-Putt for Public Radio, 5 to 7 Friday in Bovina. It's the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And right now we're going to take a closer look at one of Sullivan County's biggest infrastructure projects, a story we've been following for years here on Radio Catskill, the transformation of the Sullivan County International Airport. The airport's brand new terminal entered its final phase of construction, part of an $18.5 million investment through the New York State Upstate Airport Revitalization Program. The project promises a modern, energy-efficient facility with new amenities, but it also raises questions. Like, why spend this much money if there won't be commercial airline service? And what does this mean for the future of our community? Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke to Sullivan County Manager Joshua Potosik.
So the county was gracious enough to accept a grant from the state several years back. It was about an $18 million grant, and the county added the extra, you know, $5, $6 million to make it the $24 million project. It is in the ninth inning. We're getting very close to having a ribbon cutting, hopefully in conjunction with the governor coming down in the next week or two, hopefully. We're doing some what we call punch list items. It's a public works term about us working with the vendor that we contracted with to finish up minor things. We're not talking walls, roofs, windows. This is like, you know, this, we need a different light fixture type thing and reframing a door. So it's very minor issues that are left that we're working through, but it should be ready. We're waiting for, like I said, that ribbon cutting to actually have that formal opening. So it was about a 2-year project from the time We got the award to getting it done, which is sounds like a long time, but in construction world with governments is pretty quick. So we were happy to have that done within the state's 2-year window as well.
Yeah. So why is it important to invest in the airport now, and how will it benefit local residents?
Yeah, it's a great question, because we certainly, I know Dan and I, we get a lot of, in the legislature, get a lot of questions like, why are we putting any money into the airport, right? It's rich boys' playground, and the vast majority of people don't use it. But we see this, and I know our economic development partners see it as an economic engine, that if we can get more activity there, more people, more business-type operations, more hangars, it's going to then be able to benefit all of the residents of Sullivan County by generating sales tax, property tax for the county town, and just general economic activity, more people visiting here, more people going to our restaurants. So we kind of see it as one of our main anchors in terms of economic development for the next 5 to 10 years, where if we can really help by, one, having the terminal, getting some more reliable water sources there, infrastructure, we fully see this as being more built out, more, a lot more activity happening there, which will in turn benefit all of the residents of Sullivan County. Right now, we contribute some money in to keep the airport operations to break even. Our goal is to get that to where they're breaking even or even making money at some point. So I think by investing in things like a new terminal, we have had Solar Airs there. If we can get more clients like that, where they're buying fuel, generating money for the county budget, helps to keep our property taxes down and, you know, provide other services. So yeah, I do hear where people say the rich person's playground, but even if it stays where more affluent people are using it, that trickle down of them spending money and then employing mechanics, employing people to work on planes, will help people and the businesses all around the airport.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I always hear, and I always wonder myself, is will the airport be at any point in the future be available for commercial airlines?
I mean, if you're talking about similar to what Stewart has, probably not in the foreseeable future. I mean, we just don't have the population to house commercial scheduled jet traffic. What we envision the airport being, one, primarily is where we're going to spend some time and money to market, is to really get that corporate jets up here where they can house a plane here and make this their base of operations. Because when you're looking from a competitive perspective, we're relatively, in terms of air travel, close to New York City. And when you look at availability and cost of the airports in and around New York City, they're well beyond what we would be looking to charge. So we feel, from a competitive standpoint, if we can have a cheaper base of operations, but also, you know, there's no waiting to take off or land, we feel we can attract some of that corporate travel out of the New York, you know, think of Teterboro and Morristown, and get them up into Sullivan County, is where we're going to spend some time and money to try to really market and try to get some of that traffic out of the city up to our airport. I mean, I think there is some looking. I mean, we have a pretty long runway as well. I mean, it's we need to probably extend it a little bit more, but also, can we get, you know, an Amazon, UPS type delivery type service in here? I think that's a little bit more down the road.
Right.
I think we're ready and primed for that corporate travel, but with the eye that could we get more of a distribution type service there as well? I think that's a little bit more down the road, because we have to do some capital improvements on runway length and other things. But that corporate jet travel, I think, is where we're ready to really capitalize on by having this new terminal and then making a lot of the investments that have been made over the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, so that sort of leads into my next question I had, and you already mentioned some of the stuff, but, you know, looking ahead, you know, what is your vision for the airport over, let's say, the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think it's like what we had talked about. I think immediately, I mean, once the terminal opens, I mean, we have staff are currently working on marketing plans and looking at how we can market the airport to that corporate travel. I think our goal is to really have more hangars being built for that corporate jet traveler in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years, is I think where we're really going to spend time. And like I said, I think in that more 3 to 10 year frame, if we can find money or find grants to, you know, extend the runway as an example, then can we get an Amazon, UPS, FedEx type company in here to start using it as a distribution hub? So I think really that immediate term, midterm time frame is really that corporate travel, with a longer term look at, you know, a distribution type setup. But I think that corporate travel is where we've been talking about it, it seems like, for a while. But I think with the terminal opening and where we are in terms of infrastructure, we're ready to now really make that push to make that a reality.
So you mentioned earlier about a ribbon cutting and the governor coming down to do that ribbon cutting. When is that expecting to sort of happen?
We're hopeful the next week or two. I mean, we've been working through state DOT and secondarily through the governor's office about dates. So we were hopeful before Labor Day, but if it's right after Labor, that's fine too. But she's been touring because there was a lot of grant money that went out to various airports. So she has been, Governor Hochul has been showing up to a lot of the ribbon cuttings across the state. So we're thinking that's if what she's been doing in other counties is the same, she'll show up here. So we don't have a date. Well, you'll be the first to know once we find out too. But usually it's not a lot of notice, but hopefully we're originally aiming for this week, but we haven't heard anything yet. It could be this week. Could be right after Labor Day, but you know, this is weeks, not months, down the road.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it sounds fantastic, the new airport terminal. I look forward to seeing it one day. So, Josh, before we go, is there anything else I have not touched on that you want folks to know about?
No, I mean, I think the other thing too is it's kind of lost, but I think we did build in some office space. So if there's people looking for, you know, that have some airport related type of operation, we're going to have space for being able to be rented for, you know, airport type of operations. And we have a RFP out to really have a restaurant. We used to have a restaurant in the old terminal, but not for several years, but we have a pretty nice dining area and modern kitchen. So we're soliciting to have a restaurant there. So even if you don't ever intend to go up in the air or want to fly a plane, you'll be able to go out to eat in a new venue, hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, actually, one thing I've been seeing actually on social media that's been trending is a lot of people are taking up flying as sort of recreational and in these small little airports that are allowing flight instruction. I believe the Wurzburgo one, the smaller one in Wurzburgo, does, you know, instruction. Is there anything available like that at the Sullivan County Airport?
Not currently, but that's what I think with this office space. I think we've gotten some, you know, loose inquiries about doing like a flight school, doing some other airport related functions there where that could be their office and they use our airport as our base of operations. So I think that's the hope is with this flexible kind of office space that we will get some other business, maybe not tied into the corporate jet world, but this would be, you know, other flight schools or parachuting type stuff. So I think we're looking at different types of things that can really complement that corporate side of the house.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Parachuting. All right. Do some skydiving. I'll take Dan with me. So
I'd love it. I learned to fly there. So,
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Well, Josh, thank you so much. Well, we're talking to Josh Potosik, Sullivan County Manager, about the new airport terminal that will have a ribbon cutting soon. So again, Josh, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well. Anytime.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. Well, that's it for the local edition tonight. I'm Jason Dole. We'll be back tomorrow night with more news for you. Remember, we've got events to support Radio Catskill happening all weekend long this holiday weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. To find out about all of them, go to wjffradio.org. It's where you can also donate to support great programming like local news and conversations twice a day, 5 days a week from Radio Catskill and Local Edition. That's wjffradio.org. We've got more news and talk coming up. We've got Laura Flanders and Friends at 7, but first it's more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania. Offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Congress has approved a White House request to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and enriching everyday life. But without federal funding, we are relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
Every weekday morning at 9, NewsHour from the BBC brings you the most important international news stories. NewsHour helps you understand a complex world. Stay informed with NewsHour from the BBC, weekday mornings at 9 on Radio Catskill.